As Bill indicated, we're going to try to tag team this. I'll give you a caveat right off the beginning. We have not practiced this, so it's probably going to be
interesting.
It'll be interesting, to say the least, okay? I've noticed one thing already. We have a trend developing in the program. You know, Bill, he's got, you know, such stature and everything else. And he's the only guy so far on this program that has any hair. Now, I don't know if that was chosen to be that way. You know, the Hereford breed, they brag about their baldies, you know, and that's what they promote, of course. And Bill is promoting a different kind of baldies. I think it's BS from the baldies this morning, all right? So we'll try to keep the glare down, and the information hopefully will be acceptable to you that we're going to present this morning. I come in as the senior partner on this event, and the brilliance lies to my left or your right, okay? And that's the honest to God truth. I'm 3 years at least out of practice now, so be kind to me, all right? I retired 3 years ago, and so I'm out of practice, and I'll try to do my best and support Bob. And when the tough ones start rolling in, I'll bow to Bob and say, okay, can you please handle that question? I feel very privileged to be up here on the stage with Bob. I've admired what he's been doing, and so this has been a treat for me to put this together in conjunction with Bob. You know, we got a very, very important topic here to talk about this morning, and hopefully you will listen to the message, and hopefully we can add a little knowledge to what you already have, and also at the end maybe come to the point where maybe we can do this as a breed and make our status even better than what it is today. And certainly you are the envy of the industry. There's no question about that. And I want you to know I am one of you. I am an Angus breeder as well. All the way through my career, I kind of had to keep that down at the bottom of the list because that you just have to be pretty non-biased when you're in a position like Bob and I had. But now, by God, I can pretty much say whatever the hell I want, all right? My department head does not exist anymore. So the only one I have to answer to is the God Almighty above, that's for sure. So anyway, that's enough of that horseplay. But anyway, I noticed that there's quite a few in this audience that are gray-haired like me. And you know, I think if you'll remember back, this has been 28 years ago. How many of you went to the 1984 efficiency forum that was put on by Michigan State and Colorado State University? One. Is that it?
Oh, Jan over here, Jan Lyons.
Yeah. Okay. You know, in my career, which I did this deal like Bob's doing for like 36 years, and every once in a while there are conferences and symposiums that you go to that are extremely meaningful. And I'll guarantee you, that's probably one of the three or four in my career that I went to that I felt was extremely meaningful. And this is already 28 years ago that we held a major symposium on beef cow efficiency. As Bill indicated, I went to Michigan State to do my advanced degrees and had the real pleasure of working a lot with Harlan Ritchie. And Harlan was one of the co-leaders of this efficiency forum. And he stated back then, and I think in an article that he did for the Angus Journal, that the ultimate objective of that conference was to identify potential means for improving beef production efficiency, particular in the cow-calf industry or in the cow-calf segment. Now, that was almost 30 years ago. And my question is, have we accomplished anything in 28 years to you? Have we accomplished anything on the cow-calf side in efficiency? I think we all need to sit back and say, have we really accomplished what we want to do in relationship to the cow herd? Probably more important, let's think about our customers. You know, that's what we're in the business is to sell genetics to our customers. You know, have we thought about how we can make their operation somewhat more efficient as well? And have we changed our mindset in that approach? And I think that's pretty important as we look ahead in this business that we're in. If you look at it in the grand scheme of an inventory standpoint, we have improved efficiency of the beef cattle production system. If you just utilize gross numbers, we've done a great job. And, you know, if Harlan was sitting up here, he'd look at that chart, Bob, and he'd go to 1984 on that chart, and look what we've done, huh? We've been great since 1984, haven't we, in relationship to our production efficiency. You know, the number of cows have gone down. The amount of beef production that we're kicking out the back door has gone up. That's a good job, right? I think it is. And I think we're to be commended for that. But have we reached where we could possibly go? And I think that's the answer that we have to look for. There's probably more as we look ahead. Now, have we improved on an individual animal basis? Probably we haven't changed much, especially on the cow herd side of things. We probably haven't improved much there. But we also have had some things that we've had to address, haven't we, in the last several years. Certainly from a quality standpoint, but also from a calving ease standpoint. A lot of us have spent an inordinate amount of time to look at how we can improve calving ease, the birth weight complex, but also keep our cattle on a rapid growth. And that's been paramount in our customers' minds as well. Now, I think we've done a heck of a great job. You look at the genetic trends in the Angus breed, we've done a great job of addressing that issue. I think we've also done a great job in relationship to answering the call in relation to quality. There is absolutely no doubt in my mind about that. And I believe we're just on the cusp of really seeing that take off. And that's great. So I look at Bob at things in relationship to that, and I look at the jobs that we had to do, and I think we can put a big check mark by ones that we've done. And we have the genetic variation identified, and we can take that and utilize that in our breeding programs. We can check those off and say we've got that done. But now we have this new era that we're going to be addressing that we have to also keep in mind. So anyway, let's go on. So, Bob, I want to, you know, I think we have to address, you know, how has the beef production paradigm changed? And I'm going to hand it over to you to take a look at that.
Super. Thanks, Stro. And I'll echo Stro's comments real quickly. What an honor and a privilege it is to be in front of you today. We look forward to a pretty vigorous and energetic Q&A afterwards. But to get to Stro's question, how's our beef production paradigm changed? And I think every one of you in the room, certainly if you don't write the check, your accountant's been after you, thinking about the changes in input costs relative to feed resources, not only from a drought perspective, but certainly from a cost perspective, as we've moved through the last several years, many of us have started to think about the supplemental nutrition we provide, particularly to our cow herd, and how we might change that to minimize input costs. I don't need to tell you about fertilizer and fuel costs. There's a pretty interesting story on both of those. But certainly producers are starting to think more about efficiency. And it's certainly easy for us in our business to get sort of lulled into thinking mostly about output traits. We measure lots of traits in our production system, and many of those are tied directly to various endpoints. If we think about weaning weight or yearling weight or carcass performance, those are pretty easy to get our arms around, particularly on an individual basis. The harder things to get an understanding of are measures of efficiency, particularly at the herd level. And so producers are starting to think more about that because there's an impact and an association between, obviously, individual animal performance. But how do those come together to affect herd-level performance and profitability? And certainly producers are asking lots more questions about that and thinking through their current paradigm or their old paradigm and how that might evolve as we move forward with the changes in the beef value change, both in a pricing structure perspective, but also an input cost structure. Okay? So with that in mind, we have a tendency in our business to talk about efficiency. Well, The bad news is there's lots of different measures of efficiency in our business, right? We can think about individual animal feed efficiency or efficiency of feed utilization more precisely, and typically that's defined to some endpoint, either a fat thickness or marbling score or some kind of measurement on growing animals. We can think about the idea of metabolic efficiency, so how well does an individual animal intake or convert ingested nutrients into some level of production, whether that's carcass weight or carcass performance, gestating and reproducing and producing a calf. So lots of things we can think about the metabolic side, about how does this animal use the nutrients it absorbs and digests to maintain its tissues and functions as certainly one kind of efficiency. Maybe at a more distant perspective, production efficiency. We talk about, and I thought Stroh's comments were great on the 1984 cow efficiency meeting in Fort Collins in East Lansing. I was only a freshman in high school, so I didn't go to that. I should have. That would have been a pretty formative kind of meeting.
We'll forgive you.
But certainly had... and very interesting. If you get a chance, and I've got an electronic copy of that particular proceedings, if you're interested in a copy, there's some really good material in there that lays out sort of the systems approach to thinking about efficiency, particularly at the cow-calf level. And I think that's an area where many of us don't spend very much time. And certainly it requires probably more records than what we're used to keeping. Recognizing I'm talking to an audience that collects a lot of data already, but certainly there's opportunities to think about our system above the individual animal level, and production efficiency gets at that by thinking about outputs relative to inputs. And we'll talk more about that concept as we move ahead. And then finally, economic efficiency. At the end of the day, the relative amount of inputs and outputs is kind of inconsequential to us, right? It's how those transform into dollars, right? We're in the business, and particularly your commercial customers, are in the business to make profit, okay? And the way we sustain the beef value chain and satisfy consumers is we all have to be profitable, right? Because if we're not, what happens? We exit the business, okay? So at the end, economic efficiency should be something we need to elevate our discussion to. So it's a level even above what we typically think about in terms of production efficiency. We're going to spend a little bit of time here at the first part of the talk focusing on feed efficiency because I think it's an area where obviously we've had the most activity and certainly the most recent impact in our business. And there's different definitions that we can apply to feed efficiency. There's the classic feed to gain, or feed conversion ratio. So how many pounds of feed did it take to achieve a single pound of gain? Certainly one many of you are familiar with. If you fed a pen of cattle at a commercial yard, you get that information back on a routine basis. Some challenges, obviously, with that data. What's one of the principal things that drives differences in feed conversion ratio in a pen of cattle? Just strictly growth rate, right? And how have we improved that over time? What do we know now about cattle that go into a feed yard today versus what they were 30 years ago? Are they bigger or smaller than they used to be? They're bigger. So the way we've improved, and much, Stroh, I'll argue, of the improvement we saw in that plot of beef production relative to cow numbers has been by changing the growth rate of the animals through our production system, both genetically and certainly with technology in terms of nutrition programs, growth-promoting implants, all the things that we apply in our beef production system that change efficiency in the feed yard, primarily changes that efficiency through change in growth rate, which at the end of the day just dilutes the maintenance requirement. So the proportion of energy we use for growth versus the proportion we use for maintenance is more desirable today than it was 30 years ago. And that's where a bulk of our improvements come, and it's come by looking primarily at feed conversion ratio data. Adjusted feed to gain is just a transformation of feed to gain data that basically adjusts to a more constant growth in weight and out weight. So we look at animals on a more uniform basis because we know that those differences in weight and growth rate affect feed conversion ratio through the feed yard. We've recognized over time, and certainly not new ideas, some date back into the 1960s, some seminal papers thinking about efficiency, to look at. We know that if we select for animals based on feed conversion ratio, what happens to mature size of cows? They get bigger or smaller? They get bigger. Do they get leaner or fatter when we do that? They get leaner, okay? Which from a fed cattle perspective, probably aren't bad things. But I'll argue from a cow-calf perspective, a commercial cow-calf perspective, probably bad things. We don't want harder doing bigger cows, do we? We want easier flushing, more moderate-sized cows is a typical scenario. And so the evolution is, particularly over the last maybe 5 or 10 years, focused on measures of efficiency that get us away from those genetic antagonisms. And two of those concepts are closely related. They're residual feed intake and residual average daily gain. And both of those measures of efficiency try and get away from or provide a less biased view of efficiency at the animal level. Adjusted dry matter intake is one that looks at just a gross measure of feed consumed and then adjusted for differences in weight. Okay? All useful measures, but have different applications in our business. Okay? I want to spend just a few minutes and sort of reinforce the importance of feed efficiency in our business. Okay? Feed costs account for somewhere between 2/3 and 3/4 of the cost of production through the feeding and finishing segment of our business. So a huge impact in our business by changes in feed prices. If you've fed cattle recently have experienced $8 corn, it's blatantly obvious to you what the... No dueling.
We both have control up here, huh?
Okay. So huge impact from feed costs. And research shows us that if we look at either a 10% gain in average daily gain or 10% improvement in average daily gain or a 10% improvement in efficiency, those have differential effects on profit. Okay. Certainly increasing gain shows about a 20% improvement in profitability. But a change in efficiency showed about a 40% improvement in profitability. So it points us to the value of understanding this proportionality of inputs and outputs, okay, and really focusing on those. Some other studies done recently showed that efficiency increases have 7 to 8 times the impact of the changes in gain. So really important that we focus on efficiency, because focusing either strictly on inputs or strictly on outputs obfuscates the other component. Okay, if we look at trends in feed conversion ratio through the feed yard, this is some data a couple of my colleagues put together on a quarterly basis and look at feed conversion of steers and heifers through the feed yard. This data spans from the early 1990s through 2008. Some obvious things in there. One is it's not constant, right? There's lots of up and down based on seasonality. Feed conversion different in the summer than it is in the winter. But we also see there's kind of a general downward trend. So we're getting better over time at the genetics and the management and nutrition of those animals through the feeding phase. And I think that's important. That's a great story about sustainability and productivity of our business, given the resources we have at our disposal. But Stroh, I know you've spent a lot of time through Iowa Beef Center and your extension career talking about feed conversion and efficiency through the feed yard. What's your take on that data?
Well, and like Kansas data, we've also been keeping track of feedlot enterprise records in Iowa, and that shows pretty much the same kind of trend that Bob just showed you in Kansas. On a per year basis, during the 1990s, we were seeing about a 0.045 dry matter conversion rate improvement. Then during the last decade, it slowed off to about 0.02 to 0.03. So, you know, the conclusion is we're kind of in a position where the rate of improvement in the industry has slowed in the feedlot sector. And that's a little bothersome. And I think it's bothersome as I look at it from the standpoint that in this era of everybody's questioning what we do from an additive standpoint, a growth promotant standpoint, all of those factors are starting to really enter into this equation. And as we look ahead, you know, how much longer are we going to have those crutches, if you will? And so to me, it says that we need to get on with this from a genetic standpoint as well. And, you know, we really haven't scratched the surface in relationship to the genetics of this. So, you know, I think that's kind of what I'm reading from the standpoint, at least of our growing. Now, is there potential for improvement? I was very fortunate the last 15 years of my career to work with an Angus breeder in western Iowa that just dispersed his herd, Dr. Dwayne Warden, a great, great guy, that way back in the 1970s, he started looking at doing feed efficiency with a Pinpointer 4000 system. And he started that based off of what we were doing at the Iowa Beef Improvement Association, which is no longer in existence. And he said, you know, I think this is very important to our future. And, the rest of us go, well, there's nobody going to pay for it. And I think that's still kind of the truth yet today. People are not willing to pay for it. But in 2001, Lee Leachman, if I remember right, at the BIF conference in Omaha, there was a great deal of emphasis put on revisiting efficiency. And at that time, some old papers were dug up, like Bob suggested, one of the concepts was the development of residual feed intake. And Dwayne looked at me and said, Stroh, can we do that? And I go, sure, we can do it on a phenotypic basis. And so in 2001, we started calculating that on his old bulls and then also on all the bulls since then, along with, of course, his adjusted feed conversion ratios. And he took that to heart. Now, I want to tell you, Dwayne does not single trait select his cattle. He's just like you. He really cares about how the cattle do from a quality standpoint as well as the female side of things. So he's not a single trait selector, but he did put emphasis on it. And I bring this chart to you mainly to point out that, folks, the possibilities are here. You know, yes, this is a anecdotal producer data, but I think it's very clear from what he's been able to accomplish in the last 15, 20 years that we can improve upon the efficiency. The bulls that Dwayne has selected to use in his own program, their dry matter conversions have been just right at 5 pounds per pound to gain. His RFIs that he utilized, just not quite a -2. Interestingly enough, this last 2 years I had a chance to even look further in his program. We didn't put the slide in, maybe we should have, but I looked at, he also utilizes some outside bulls in his program, just like everybody does. And so we looked at how have those bulls done in comparison to his own bulls. And we looked at those progeny from his bulls versus the progeny from the outside bulls, and his were 7% more efficient than what the bulls from the outside of the program were. So I think there's potential here. And you know what? How much do we get from a RowGrow implant? Anybody got a percentage on their mind? Just about the same amount. You know, we get about a 5 to 8% advantage by using a RowGrow implant. And that's been accomplished by using genetics here. So I think there's some potential there. And we haven't scratched the surface in this arena. So, that's kind of my thought. Bob, you know, you've looked at what modest improvements can do. And I appreciate what you've done on that. But, you know, we talk about the industry as a whole, what this can do from a standpoint of cost. And you've got some great numbers to look at in that area.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that, you know, we saw somewhere 7, maybe 10% improvement in Doc Warden's herd. I was several years ago working on, and I'm involved in a large feed efficiency research and extension project here in the U.S., and trying to put some numbers around what improvement might mean to our business in terms of either cost savings or value creation. And at that time, I took the perspective of residual feed intake versus residual gain. You could do the same exercise very easily, thinking about if we increase residual average daily gain in a pen of animals or the whole beef herd by, say, 0.2 pounds a day, how much value does that create through the value chain in terms of additional product that we produce? This particular one, I took the feed savings kind of perspective, and so used RFI, but looked at about a 7 to 8% improvement in feed consumption, so about a 2 pound decrease across the feeding sector on an average daily basis of feed consumed. So if we think about a typical fed steer on a dry matter basis towards the end of the finishing periods, consuming somewhere 25, 26 pounds of dry matter, let's just shave 2 pounds off that, okay? What impact does that have in our business? Well, if we look at this data was put together in 2011. We had about 27 million head of fed cattle slaughtered in 2010. So 2 pounds represents on calf feds about 370 odd pounds of less feed consumed by the efficient animals versus the typical animal. In a yearling fed system, so obviously since they're on feed for a shorter period of time, about 260 pounds. If you look at that, and I used a third of our population as calf feds, two-thirds as yearling feds, that number is probably skewed a little bit more towards yearling cattle given the value of gain outside the feed yard in our current system. But these numbers are pretty close to where I think they ought to be. But if you look at the total savings just from that modest 2 pound per head decrease in feed consumption, obviously when you multiply that out across 27 million head, and this today, I mean, anybody buy feed in the feed yard for $2.94 a ton delivered recently? Yeah, that's long ago, right? We're probably, Daryl, somewhere in the 350s,
yep.
Something like that.
On a dry matter basis.
On a dry matter basis. So these numbers are conservative, let's say. That kind of cost savings represents about $1.1 billion in feed cost savings. Okay? That's not with an M million. That's with a B billion. Okay? It's a pretty substantial chunk of money. Okay? From a relatively modest decrease in feed intake. Okay? Do I have everybody's attention yet? Okay, so I think you know the illustration of what we can gain, and Doc Warden arguably has been at it a while, but pretty easily showed 7 to 10% improvement in feed conversion ratio, which you could calculate back into some kind of reduced feed intake or improved performance, whichever perspective you want to use to look at it. But these kind of gains are achievable. Okay, the thing we need to do to achieve them is get after it, right?
Exactly.
So I think it's important though when we start. From at least a scientific perspective, start to understand and break apart improvements in efficiency, okay? And there's really two ways an animal can become more efficient in our production system. One of those is through improved digestion and metabolism. We know there are differences in the ability of individual animals to intake feed and convert that into some kind of usable form of energy. Okay, we know there's an impact of the rumen microbial population, how that animal maintains and controls that population of animals to produce components of their production and energy that they can use as ruminants. But we also know that there's a difference in the way individual animals utilize those absorbed nutrients. So how do they partition that energy into tissue repair and protein turnover or deposition of fat and adipose, growth, all those sort of things. And so as a scientific community, one of the things we're working aggressively to try and understand more thoroughly is both of these components and specifically how do genetics and management interact to affect those differences in efficiency. As we think about breaking efficiency apart, certainly there's a component that's associated with maintenance, so that protein turnover and tissue repair and locomotion and digestion, all those things that an animal needs to do just to be status quo in terms of weight and performance. And we know that there's differences. We also know that there's differences from the production side in terms of how that animal uses energy to grow and perform and produce in our production system. And lots of interesting research going on, not only in sort of the genetic realm, but the epigenetic realm, about how does management of our cow herd and the protein supplementation of those cows. If you're interested in this kind of idea, Rick Funston at University of Nebraska is doing a lot of work on how we supplement cows and the subsequent impact and performance and efficiency that has on the calves that they produce that were gestated during that period of time. Okay, so some really interesting things about how we manage our cows that ordinarily we wouldn't think, our cow nutrition when those cows are gestating would have some kind of effect downstream on cow, their daughter's efficiency, feed efficiency of the calves and so forth, but we're finding there's some impacts there. And the other piece of efficiency that we want to get to as we talk more through the program this morning is getting at cow efficiency. And for many of us, that's a pretty... it's pretty big to get your arms around cow efficiency because it's the impact of not only individual animal feed efficiency, so how an individual cow utilizes and harvests forage on our farm or ranch, but how does she use that energy to reproduce, gestate a calf, lactate, and eventually wean a calf. Okay, lots of complexities in that part of the system that we need to think about, because it has an impact as seed stock producers on our customers' bottom line. Okay, one of the important things to realize is that we've got tools available today that particularly address efficiency of growing animals, and I think it's important that we not overlook that as a really important piece of our selection strategy. As Stroh suggested, likely ought to be included in a multiple trait selection strategy. And so, hats off to y'all as Angus breeders for developing a selection index architecture where this kind of information can be easily inserted and used to help understand that input-output relationship. But we've got EPDs across the industry that include residual gain. American Gelpie Association uses a days to finish EPD. We've got breed associations that calculate a feed intake EPD that goes directly into selection index at American Simmental. And certainly some maternally oriented indexes that get at maintenance energy or that requirement of energy used just to keep our cow herd functioning. Those would be either maintenance energy. I know you guys have dollar EN and incorporate some of that information into your dollar W index as well. So we've got tools in place to sort of start helping us bridge from not only the growing animal but into the cow-calf sector. One of the important things that we need to recognize, though, is that all of our improvement doesn't have to be driven off of measuring individual feed intake on animals. Obviously, that's been a huge challenge for our business, going out and measuring accurately the associated gain given the intake of individual animals is a pretty challenging process. Okay, it takes some technology, some investment, and certainly a lot of dedication to make sure all that stuff's working to collect that kind of data. But the reality is we can gather a large piece of information by just looking at output traits, right? We know that input drives gain, okay? And so we can look at a variety of production parameters, average daily gain, metabolic midweight of cattle during a feeding trial, and actually do a pretty good job of predicting feed intake. This is some data that Mike McNeil has put together based on some Simmental feed intake data collected at the University of Illinois. And basically what he did, the bottom axis there represents a breeding value or EPD for feed intake, calculated using individual feed intake records, average daily gain, and metabolic weight, so the sort of average weight during the feeding period. On the y-axis or the vertical axis there is a breeding value for feed intake computed just using average daily gain and metabolic weight, okay, so not using individual feed intake records. What you find is the correlation is 0.84, so there's a strong linear relationship between those two traits. And if we square that value, so somewhere around 0.6, we capture 0.6 of the variation in breeding value for feed intake that's calculated with a feed intake record by just using average daily gain and metabolic weight, okay? Cowboy speak, that means we get a whole bunch of the genetic information for feed intake by just looking at average daily gain and metabolic weight. Okay, so the idea is, how many of y'all collect in weights and out weights of your bulls when they go on test? Okay, almost everybody does that, right? You may not think about it that way, but you could use weaning weight and yearling weight. Okay, that's all the information you need to calculate average daily gain and metabolic weight. Okay. And you capture 2/3 of the information about feed intake, okay? So my point here is that we need to use, and your association is a leader in already using some of that information to calculate values that represent inputs to efficiency, okay? The rest of the industry, we need to. This is a huge, huge source of information that we shouldn't overlook. As sort of national cattle evaluation, we have a tendency to think about, well, what records do we have for feed intake? Well, it's a relatively small number. But if you expand your perspective to include these other parameters of growth, we actually have a huge resource of data that we can bring to bear to address feed intake and feed efficiency. So what role can genetics play? There's, I think, a pretty important story here relative to the success we've had. Think about birth weight and yearling weight, okay? How much have we changed those two traits, and particularly the association between them over time? Dramatically, right? Those traits have moderate heritabilities, a relatively strong genetic correlation between them. We've driven birth and yearling weight apart, and particularly in Angus, remarkably, okay? We've had a huge success in doing that by using selection tools like EPDs, okay? Well, the good news is the relationships between average daily gain and dry matter intake is about the same magnitudes, okay? We can have that same huge amount of success if we apply tools. The table that's in front of you, the first two columns are average daily gain and dry matter intake. Heritabilities are 0.26 and 0.4 in this data. The genetic correlation between them about 0.56. Our goal in selection should be to use the heritabilities of those two traits and select for them. Obviously, we'll have some modifications for composition and all kinds of other stuff. But what we want to do is break the antagonism between average daily gain and dry matter intake. We want to drive those two pieces apart. So we want to minimize that genetic correlation. Okay? Does that make sense to everybody?